As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to Football and Grits. It's Monday, November 1st. I almost said October 1st, which it's not. I hope you had a very spooky weekend. Andy, I think we know Florida did. We'll talk about them here in a second.
Yes, he did.
But I am your host, David Ubben, here with my co-host, Andy Staples. Andy, we got a lot to talk about. A big weekend in the SEC. I assume Florida has been to better cocktail parties. Anyone associated with Florida probably has been to better cocktail parties. We got to start there. We got a lot to talk about today. Florida, obviously, they hang around for most of that first half. The Stetson Bennett, JT Daniels discourse was growing, I imagine. And then, of course, Georgia's defense happens, and you snap your fingers and it goes from 3-0 to 24-0 and the game is essentially over before they get in the locker room. This morning on The Athletic, our colleagues, Bruce Feldman and G. Allen Taylor, had a very revealing piece where they talked to a dozen or so coaches around the SEC about Florida. Andy, I'm going to read you one of the key quotes from that piece. Florida, they just don't play hard, said an SEC East coach. Georgia's trying to rip your head off. They might be up 30-0, and their linebackers are flying upfield to get after your ass. Florida is a finesse team. Kentucky plays hard. You watch UF on tape. They've got skill, but they're not physical. What did you make of that piece? Many quotes like that. What did you make of that frank assessment of the Gators?
Well, there's nothing that's on video that would refute that.
Yeah, LSU especially. I mean, LSU, I think, was really eye-opening.
That's exactly what we've seen from them. And it's been the recruiting piece of this, which Alan and Bruce get deeper into in the story, mm-hmm. has been a complaint about Dan Mullen since he got to Florida. And it has been one of those that's been, okay, he's doing well with the guys he has. He's developing the players he has. The thought is, okay, if you keep winning, then you're going to start reeling in those top five type classes. But Florida's not. They had a couple recent decommits. Their 2022 class is in pretty sad shape right now. So there's one SEC recruiting coordinator in Bruce and Allen's story says they've got some really good players, but they don't have the depth of really good players that Alabama and Georgia do. Mm-hmm. Georgia's third string guys are freaks. And this is – so Dan Mullen was asked about the talent level after the game by Matt Baker from the Tampa Bay Times. And he said, well – you know, our talent level is better last year because we won and it wasn't as good this year. And then he turned the question back on Matt and said, what would you say about our talent level? And Matt declined his invitation, but
Matt
we
is
don't
a
have
pro,
to decline.
By the way.
Yeah. We don't have to decline his invitation. Realistically, how many of Florida's starters would start for Georgia right now?
On which side of the ball? Any of them?
Yes. Kyrie Elam, I think, probably would take a corner spot.
Yeah,
maybe.
He definitely would. I feel like Florida's got two quarterbacks that I might take over Stetson Bennett. It might be a controversial take, but that's more. There's more talent there. JT Daniels, I would take over both those guys.
That's two.
I'd have to look a little bit closer at Florida's offensive more positions. Line. Yeah, I know. I'd have to look a little bit closer at Florida's offensive line, and I don't, you know, that might be picking nits at that point. But the point is rather obvious here in that you're struggling.
Yeah. I mean, they're just not as good. They are not good enough to do what the fan base wants, which is compete for national titles. And they are not recruiting the kind of players that they need to get good enough to do that. And that's the major existential issue at Florida. And then if you bring up, okay, well, what about a different coach? The response is, well, who are you going to get that's better? And it's a legitimate question.
Yes.
Who are you going to get that's going to recruit the way you want, who also can coach well enough to do? And that's the tricky part. When you're trying to win national championships, it ain't easy. It's not supposed to be easy.
And the flip side of this too is, okay, well, if you're trying to play devil's advocate and defend Dan Mullen here, you're saying, well, you know, last year they had Kadarius Toney, they had Kyle Pitts, they had Kyle Trask, and those are fair points. But the bar for Florida, the reason he was hired is to turn Florida into the Alabama, the Georgia. And guess who doesn't have down years, Andy?
Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah, they don't. Their down year is they only, you know, in Alabama's case, he might be beat by two touchdowns instead of three.
And Dan's saying, well, if he's just going to use the results with Georgia, saying, well, the talent level at Florida was better last year.
Yeah, he glossed over some of the injuries on Georgia's team last year.
But the thing is, you've played Georgia four times and you've lost three times.
Yeah.
So is 25% an acceptable margin for you? Is that good enough? And the other thing that I'm pretty sure this is somebody who covers Florida who asked this question, because it teed this up to get thrown in Dan Mullen's face a lot. But here's the question that was asked to Kirby Smart about recruiting.
Hey, Kirby, recruiting is something you obviously value and you seem to do pretty well at it with all the talent you have. Where does that sort of mindset to always sort of be recruiting come from, and why do you think you have so much success with it?
You have to. I mean, guys, if you don't recruit, there's no coach out there that can out-coach recruiting. Okay, I don't care who you are. The best coach to ever play the game better be a good recruiter, because no coaching is going to out-coach players. I mean, anybody will tell you our defense is good because they got good players. So spending time on the phone, you know, spending time with people at your house, spending time with people when they come to your campus. You know, I'm not with my family when I'm doing that. My family sacrifices so that I can go and spend time with other people's families so that we have good players. So, you know, that's 25% evaluation. That's 50% recruiting. And another 25% is going to be coaching. But if you don't recruit, guys, you got no chance. Just go look. Look at the best teams out there. They got good football players. And that's the reason I believe in recruiting. And I believe you better always be recruiting. Always be recruiting. Because if you're not, somebody else is.
Andy, I believe the phrase was always be closing. Not always be recruiting. It's
coffee it's is the... for recruiters, David. Coffee is for recruiters.
Always be cruton. Always be cruton. Yeah, I mean, I think two things with that. One, obviously, he's completely correct. Did you take that as he's just talking about philosophy? Or did you feel like
SEC, David. No.
So you're taking it as it was a semi-veiled shot at his failed foe, I suppose.
I don't believe it was veiled or semi-veiled at all. I believe it was, you want to come here and win national titles, that's what we're doing.
Well, here's my point to that, is if you're going to do that, why not just go all in and make it a little more obvious what you're talking about? What's the downside?
If you don't want
that?
The producer dancing in the video, that you want the speech from the Source Awards? That's
yeah, exactly. I feel, you know, either way, it's pretty obviously correct, and I think not to channel the spirit. It's post Halloween, but I don't want to channel the spirit of Ari Wasserman, of course. But I mean, this is just what recruiting is. Obviously, you know, you have better players, you're going to win better game or more games most of the time. And you can find all these examples of opposite, but there's a why are Georgia and Alabama the best teams every single year?
But you can't, well, you can't find examples opposite that are winning national titles. You can find individual examples where some guy who was a zero star walk on becomes a first round draft pick.
Yes.
But in the aggregate, you need to sign top 50 players.
Yeah.
If you don't, you will not have a chance to win the national title. That is basically it. And, you know, people don't want to believe that because they want to believe that everybody has a chance and that everybody can, if they pull themselves up by their bootstraps, can do it. No, you need special players if you want to win national titles.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's
the
little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
This sort of leads into our next point, Andy, and I will ask you a question as we get into expanding the playoff. Would a 12-team playoff possibly break our good friend Bud Elliott's gospel blue chip ratio?
No. No, it wouldn't change who wins because the only teams that could win in that scenario where they have to win three in a row or four in a row against really, really, really good teams are the super talented teams, the super deep teams. So the same teams that have been winning national titles. Yeah. But that doesn't change the fact that everybody else has fun as they try to make the playoff. And it also doesn't change the possibility of that team we're talking about that maybe doesn't have all of the blue chippers could shock one of those teams on a given day.
Yeah.
I just don't think you could do it three times in a row.
So Saturday, Greg Sankey pushed back on the, Machiavellian image of himself a little bit in that he was pulling all these strings from behind the scenes. But there's no question that it seemed like we were on a straight line to a 12-team playoff. And then when Texas and Oklahoma left, people have hit the brakes a little bit. But Greg Sankey was asked, he's talked about this a couple times, but he basically said 4-12, 8 with a whole bunch of automatic opportunities for conference champions does not work. And his case is that, if you're going to bring in a Pac-12 champion or, let's say this year Clemson upsets Wake Forest or something in the ACC championship and you get a 4-4 or what?
That would be a division game. But
But you get like a 7-5, team in the playoff based on an automatic bid. He basically says fans would see through that. They would say that's not a legitimate, playoff contender. The 8 with all these auto bids, we don't like that. We want to do 12. And how you get there is sort of up for debate. We can figure that out. Now, the flip side of that is I don't necessarily think he's wrong. I think if you see a 3-4 loss Pac-12 champion getting in over, a SEC West runner-up that goes 11-1. He's probably right. That doesn't seem fair to me. But you keep the intrigue in the conference races, and a lot more teams are alive, even than 12. If you talk about 8,
doesn't the 12 keep the same intrigue in the conference races when the top 6 ranked conference
not
champions
necessarily make? A little bit, but not necessarily. If you are sitting there and you're who's a good example? I forget who I'm thinking of. In the ACC. The ACC is pretty wide open, but I forget exactly.
Okay.
If you're sitting there at 4-4 but you're 3-2 mm-hmm. in the ACC. Mm-hmm. You are not getting into a 12-team playoff. You're not. But okay. but you get hot, you beat the right teams, and then you shock someone in the ACC title game. You could still get there.
Then adjust the 12 teams so that you have, instead of the six highest ranked conference champions, you say these conference champions.
You could. You could. But then, of course, you get into, as the Big 12 is shifting, who gets those auto bids and who doesn't?
That's I don't want to see the crappy team that got hot. And
I don't necessarily either, but I think you can add a little bit of intrigue. I generally think I agree with Sankey.
But you're going to add plenty of intrigue in the 12 team with the six highest ranked conference champs as the number six and number seven conference champ duke it out, or the teams
you go 12 and you're definitely going to have auto bids, I would agree with you. But I think when you start debating on who gets,
they're going to have auto bids. If it's going to be 12, it's going to be what they put out already. So
yeah. I mean,
the way Sankey's put this all along, his position has not changed on this. They want as many at-larges as there are now or more. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's probably an eight. If you would do best eight, I think he'd go for it. But the rest of them aren't going to go best eight.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, what would you like to see, Andy? Do you like the six auto bids, six at-large?
I like the 12 one because I want to see the home games. I still think they should have all of the games on campus until the final, but I'm never going to get what I want on that. So, but I like that. I was laughing at the bowl directors. Well, we don't want them to put those games on campus. Please think of the middlemen. Think of the poor middlemen who want to provide you with a worse product.
Exactly. The combination of ease for logistics, the reward of winning a home game, and like just you're going to have, if you have a 12
awesome.
Team, it would be awesome. But you're going to have, if you have a 12-team playoff, Andy, there's going to be some dud games. And you're asking a lot of fans. If you're going to play three games on neutral sites, that's a lot that you're asking.
I'm with you. But they're going to play three games on neutral sites anyway if they go to eight, because they're just still so – like, I cannot wait until that generation completely phases out, the one that got greased by the Bulls for all those years.
And figures out, why do we need younger these generation. Guys?
It's like, we really don't need to give these people any money or anything. They are worthless to us.
Yes. It doesn't make any sense. They're entranced by the colored blazers, Andy. That's what it is. That's what we need to do. Our staff should just get a bunch of colored blazers, and we would have a leg up on the rest of college football media. I like this
idea. What color would the Athletics blazers be?
Well, the unfortunate truth is black, which don't really stand out. We have a very minimalist design, but we'd have to figure out
our logo. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. We'd have to figure out something a little bit.
The black ones would look good. Couldn't we just dress like the Men in Black? We could have neuralizers too.
I like it. That's not bad. Or maybe we could just go full Roy Kent and go black on black on black.
I can't do a tie that skinny. I just can't.
Either way, I like the plan. We'll have to figure it out as we go on. The one other part of this, Andy, as the SEC shifts and becomes a 16-team conference here in, we'll see when exactly. You talk to people around the league. People are very cagey about what they want or what they want to see. I think people are studying it. People are saying, well, pods, divisions, no divisions. What do you want to see? It's a very awkward dance. And right now there's no deadline. So everybody can just sort of talk in theory and, well, this or that, or say things quietly. We haven't seen a lot of like stand at the pulpit and say, we got to do this. We got to do this. The only thing that everyone seems to agree on is that going 12 years between visiting a campus is insane, and that is not a way to operate a conference, and that's going to change.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on the pods, divisions, no divisions thing?
I think it should be three fixed opponents, not a pod. Mm-hmm. Because the pods get complicated too, even if it's four pods.
I don't love the pods personally.
Remember, it's going to be a 9-game schedule. You know, they can say, well, we haven't decided. Yeah, they have. They're going to nine. So the most elegant way to do it is everybody has three fixed opponents and then you rotate everybody else through. And there still will be years where somebody gets a better draw than somebody else. But for the most part, I think that will probably make it where the contenders for the title have a fairly even draw because it is rotating so much.
I don't see the purpose for the divisions. They're already nonsensical anyway, as it stands. I don't see a need for a division. I like the scheduling plan of three cross divisional and just play.
You needed divisions because that was what the NCAA rule said. You had to have two divisions to play a championship game, but that's gone now. They've changed that. So you don't need divisions. Divisions only hurt you. In fact, like with the ACC went divisionless last year, it was perfect. It was exactly the way it should be.
Yes.
And so the ACC, the Big Ten has more lopsided divisions than even the SEC did when the East was down.
And that doesn't feel very really cyclical either. That feels very much permanent. Yeah.
Yeah. So they need to get rid of them.
I don't know that we'll see that. I think a lot of coaches' bonuses may be tied to division championships or where you place, and that might help.
Contracts can be rewritten.
I'm not saying that you do that. I'm saying that coaches might push for that because you're not going to get anything for finishing fifth in the SEC, but you might get something for winning the East.
But you are going to get something for making an appearance in the championship game. What's the difference between an SEC coach getting a bonus for winning the East and a Big 12 coach getting an appearance for making or getting a bonus for making an appearance in the championship game?
Well, let's say you could share a division title and be in a three-way tie or share one or all those things. Either way, the divisions serve no purpose. I don't know if there's going to be that much pushback, but I don't see it. I don't see it. Andy, it's a big week in college football. As far as what the playoff is now, it's a four team. We know Georgia, if they're not number one, something has gone horribly wrong.
What do they make the Green Bay Packers number one? Like the Rams?
Yes, exactly.
Who else could it be?
I'm as far as overall, my biggest question with the committee is what they do with Cincinnati. But from an SEC perspective, Alabama is really, really interesting. Because if you watch them, they look like the second best team in the country. They probably don't have the second best resume. It's close. But Ohio State can hang with them. And then what do you do with your undefeated teams? Michigan State's got a pretty good resume. Do I think they're better than Alabama? Probably not.
What do you do with the team that beat Ohio State and Columbus?
Yep.
That only has one loss.
That group from 2 to 7, Andy, you could order them in a lot of different ways.
Any way you want.
It is real. You could make a case for just about anyone in any different order. And so where Alabama starts, and I think the way that this plays out is if Alabama's starting up there at number 2 and they perhaps drop a game, you got to like their odds of sticking around because making the playoff, but if they're starting at 5 or 6, and you lose to Auburn and you don't get in the SEC championship, they're not in the playoff. It might be close if they're hanging around at number 2.
If they lose to Auburn, they're not in the playoff. There's no chance.
There is a chance, Andy. There's not a lot of great teams.
There is a 0.0% chance that Alabama will make the playoff if they lose to Auburn.
All right.
0.0.
0.0. All right. You're not betting on chaos. Andy, there's still a month left of games, and people love Alabama.
Okay. That's great. If they lose to Auburn, they're not going to be in the playoff. If they lose to Auburn, Auburn will have a better chance of making the playoff because Auburn will probably be 10-2 with a win against Alabama. And Auburn, by the way, Auburn at 10-2 is the West champ.
Yeah, I know. Remember, that's what I'm saying. But then they're probably going to lose to Georgia in control. More than likely.
Okay. Well, they might. But they're still not going to put Alabama in the playoff if they lost to Texas A&M and they lost to Auburn. If they finish 3rd in the SEC West, they're not putting them in the playoff.
Andy, that assumes that A&M is going to keep winning, though.
I don't know. Well, actually, what I just said assumes that Auburn beats A&M this weekend, which I have no idea what's going to happen in that game.
I don't either.
I'm very excited for that one.
Both of those teams have been a little bit all over the place. Either way, tonight or Tuesday night is going to be fascinating to see what they do. What do you make of this Auburn team, Andy? Because early in the season, you know, they demolished a couple bad teams. They hang around against Penn State. Penn State has kind of slipped. But since then, they've gotten hot after the Georgia State sort of debacle turned miracle you go 96 yards and then with your backup quarterback and TJ Finley. And then you go back to Bo Nix. And Auburn, you watch them. They don't jump off the page at you, but they're definitely at their best when they're leaning on Tank Bigsby and then letting Bo Nix make some plays when he needs to, and not asking him to throw the ball 45 times a game. But we saw Tank Bigsby 23 carries, tied his season high this week against Ole Miss. They're taking advantage of some of those soft boxes that, that Ole Miss throws up there with that 3-2-6 alignment. All that stuff. How, I mean, Andy, it comes down to how good do we think Auburn is at this point?
I think they're finding themselves. I think they've somewhat found an identity.
They're improving, the question is, which is nice.
Right. Can you do that against the level of talent you're going to see this weekend? Like, can you run on a Texas A&M defensive line the way you ran on Ole Miss's?
No.
And the answer is probably not. But your defense, which shut, you know, didn't shut down Ole Miss completely, but held them down enough.
Mm-hmm.
Your defense should be able to keep A&M from scoring a bunch of points. Like, I do think Auburn has a great chance to win this game.
They do.
I think
A&M, I don't think is going to be able to score 27, 24 points. I think it's going to be a pretty low scoring game, at least on Auburn's side. I mean, on Texas A&M's side. And what can they do down the field? What can they do to loosen up the A&M front? Can you prevent A&M from consistently getting pressure with four guys, which they've done to some teams? Not everyone consistently.
DeMarvin Leal makes a very big difference because you can put him anywhere. That the scary part of DeMarvin Leal is he's 290, but he can come off the edge. But he's 290, so you can put him. I mean, they'll put him at nose. They put him at nose against South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Like South Carolina, I believe Cole Kubelik mentioned this on the broadcast of A&M South Carolina. Like the South Carolina plan, I think, was to slide protection to wherever DeMarvin Leal was. He used the nose. You can't slide protection to a nose. Like as Cole put it, like what is sliding protection to a nose? Is it a field goal? Is it the field goal block? Or your field goal blocking? Like that's what that is. So he is such a weapon for Texas A&M, and that will make it hard for all of their opponents going forward when they're trying to game plan their protections. And so that's what Auburn's got to figure out is how do you keep Bo Nix safe? Now, I will say, I don't know if this is something that Brian Harsin and Mike Bobo consciously have said to Bo Nix, hey, feel free to roam a little more, or or if it's just the way it's working out. But it does feel like he's using his athleticism in a more controlled way. Not in a way of, I'm a good athlete, I have to make something happen, so I'm just going to go crazy here. It does feel like he's very much in control of what he's doing behind the line of scrimmage as they try to set up passes. And a guy of his athletic ability, look, he's not a sitting duck back there. He can move around, and even if you have a good pass rush, he might, as LSU unfortunately learned, he might get away and make a play. So I like the way Auburn is trending. And the fact that they are in control of everything for themselves makes this really intriguing.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle Field will be rocking this weekend. They're a little salty. They didn't get game day this weekend, but we'll see. Either way, you know what we haven't talked about in a long time, Andy, is Bo Nix off his back foot. And some of those mechanics,
No.
when he needs to make a throw, he's making those throws. And then, of course, you know, the athletic ability, the scrambling thing. He feels like he has a much better feel for it. He's not bailing out of clean pockets. We saw that a little bit when he was a little bit younger. Now he seems to be a little more patient, eyes in the right place, downfield. And then, you know, when he's making those crazy scramble plays, he's not opening his hips up, rolling to his left, and throwing across the field to his right.
Right.
Trying to make the Brett Favre play.
He's making a reasonable throw.
Yeah, I haven't seen him
even
on
those.
He's
doing
on those
some
plays.
Less than reasonable things.
Yeah, on those plays where he's running around and just sort of playing backyard football, he hasn't made a throw where you're just like, that is an insane idea, and that's a pick 8 times out of 10. He's not doing that, and that I think is growth. You're not forcing him to be something that he's not, and you are leaning into the things that make him a really good player, that made him such a sought after prospect initially. And I think a lot of people had their doubts that Brian Harsin was going to be able to do that in the way that his offense works, because we haven't seen that guy. He hadn't had that guy at Texas, at Boise. He didn't really do that much. And he's got one now, and he's letting him do what he does best. And Auburn is benefiting. But like I said, in the same breath, when they need to, they're not getting away from Tank Bigsby. And I think if you do that, if you give Tank Bigsby 11 carries and you ask Bo Nix to throw the ball 40 times, that's a recipe for a loss. And we haven't seen that as much.
Yeah, well, and also Jarquez Hunter, let's not forget, he's averaging 7.7 yards a carry. He's incredible.
Really good player. That's the guy that makes the future.
As 1-2 punches go in a backfield, is there a better one in the country?
Oh, I'd have to look. Before the season, I might have said the Aggies, but they've been a little bit underwhelming, in part because of the offensive line. If you flip the backs and the offensive line from A&M and Auburn, I might have said maybe. But I'd have to look. Certainly not in the SEC, I would say. But I will say, Andy, you know, there's one SEC head coach I talked to this year who believes Tank is the best player in the SEC. And that surprised me. But you watch him, when he really gets rolling, I mean, the Tank nickname is very apt, because you see him hit somebody and he's getting 3 or 4 more yards after he gets double, you know, the two guys are gang tackling him, and that adds up over time. And not to compare him to Derrick Henry, but over 4 quarters, you get tired of that.
You don't want to tackle that for 4 quarters.
No. Because he's not a guy that's going to go down soft. He's going to lower his head and run through your chest, and you might bring him down. But again, in the fourth quarter, you're getting a little tired of that, and Ole Miss looked a little tired of that as Auburn kind of salted that game away. On the other side of the conference, Andy, what did we make of Kentucky? I thought they were in real trouble in this ball game. I thought it was going to be a rough spot for them going into Starkville, a Mississippi State team that's probably underrated, that has some really good defensive pieces. We've talked on this podcast about the 3-3-5. Who knows if that's exactly why Will Levis struggled as much as he did. He didn't seem to be seeing things very well. Season-high 3 picks for him. They were forcing it a little bit. Are you concerned about Kentucky down the stretch? They got Tennessee this week, a very losable game. Tennessee has played really strong. We were talking about a 12-1 or 11-1 Kentucky team last week. Is 8-4 something you're concerned about coming down the stretch here?
Not really. I mean, they've had a sloppy game. They had a sloppy game against South Carolina before. But listen, this is the only week I'd really worry about them losing. Mm-hmm. Even if they're sloppy, I think they can beat everybody else in their schedule, even if they play a bad game. But Tennessee, they're going to have to play well to beat Tennessee.
You need your A-minus game if you're Kentucky to win that game.
Yeah, they're going to have to score with Tennessee. And, I mean, what a win for Tennessee that would be.
Yeah.
Because this is a game that looked unwinnable probably a month and a half ago. And now because if we're going to talk about tiers in the SEC East – obviously, Georgia rules all, but if Tennessee beats Kentucky, that's a pretty big mishmash under Georgia.
Yeah.
And probably Tennessee didn't think they would probably nobody at Tennessee thought they could be in that tier this soon, but maybe they can.
Well, I think one thing, you know, the thing with that jumps out to me about Tennessee, and I think they got a great shot to win this weekend, but the problem that we've seen with Tennessee is weirdly the talent, you know, has not matched up to the production. But now when you have one of the least talented teams that Tennessee's had in a long time, when they've played, you know, they look well coached, because look, South Carolina and Missouri, very comparable talents to where Tennessee is at. And Tennessee beat the stuffing out of both of those teams. Kentucky is not in another world compared to where Tennessee is. They're a little bit more experienced. They have more talent. But from top to bottom, it's not like you're comparing, you know, Georgia with, Purdue or something like that. They're pretty close. So, you know, this Tennessee team looks very well coached. They haven't had a game where it's just really a disaster. Kentucky's had, what, 2 of them now? If you can count Chattanooga. Maybe if you want to count South Carolina.
South Carolina. Yeah. So it's possible. I mean, those games have happened. I think they come back pretty strong from this one. You know, they played like right after South Carolina, they played Florida and they played one of their best games against Florida. So, you know, maybe they bounce back and
they played okay against a lot of the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it matters. Yeah. Like, it's one of those.
They got out healthy and they had a pretty good game plan. And they covered at the last second.
Yeah. So I'm excited for this game because of what it could mean for Tennessee, but for Kentucky, I mean, you win this one, you're in really good shape. You're looking at a 10-win season. Yeah. And that's I talked to Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio over the summer, and he was the only one saying, hey, this could be a 10-win team. And I was like, yeah, well, whatever. I mean, I thought they were going to be good. I said they were probably going to be my
– We were both pretty high on Kentucky coming into the year.
Yeah, but 10 wins seemed like a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
If they win this one, they're probably winning 10.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the – From the Tennessee perspective, you know, coming into the year, they looked like 6-6 with a shot to go 5-7. Now they're cruising to 6-6 with a shot this weekend, really, to go 7-5. You're not going to beat Georgia, but it's tough to see them losing to South Alabama or Vandy. This game really does decide a lot, I think, for both of these teams. A massive, massive game. And Tennessee has done this before in 18, a really good Kentucky team. And with Benny Snell, Terry Wilson, and Tennessee beat the heck out of them in Neyland Stadium. So this will be a fun one. I think one of the more interesting games of the weekend for sure. And like I said, it's only November 1st, but this is a game that I think is really going to tell you a lot about how these two seasons end up.
How about Fayetteville, where you've got two teams vying for bowl eligibility that when you looked at the beginning of the season and how deep the SEC West was going to be, is like, okay, these teams are both better, but where are the wins going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
They've found them. They've found them in various places. So Mississippi State coming off the winning Kentucky, Arkansas trying to win number 6 and go to a bowl game, which, you know, a couple years ago would have seemed impossible. Who do you think wins this one?
Well, it's been a while since we've seen Arkansas really look like a team that they look like early in the season. I think Arkansas matches up well. That you know, they live in that rush 3, drop 8, and can you force Will Rogers into some mistakes? Can you get him a little frustrated to force the ball downfield, do some things, get tired of running mesh 800 times and taking that 4-yard completion? I like Arkansas in this ball game. I think they can win that battle up front. Mississippi State's defensive front is really, really good. But KJ Jefferson has proved himself this year as a guy who, you know, when you want to stack the box, he's going to make you respect his arm, make some plays downfield. Treylon Burks can obviously make a ton of plays on contested balls. If he's one-on-one and there's no safety help, he's probably going to make a play a handful of times in a game. So I like Arkansas in that ball game. Obviously, should be a pretty good atmosphere in Fayetteville, a big one. To get to a bowl game will be massive. And then, Andy, the other game that people are sleeping on this week, Hugh Freeze's return to Oxford.
Before we get to that, let me point something out, because I was just scrolling through the game list this week.
Yes.
It's LSU Alabama week. We have not even mentioned it.
Well, like that, I was literally thinking of that, but LSU just feels like it's hard to really even.
Right, they fired their coach. I mean,
it's like, what are we even
Alabama's
doing?
Alabama's better.
Yeah, it's like, what are we even doing with LSU over the next month? It's kind of like it feels like none of this really matters. It's real. There's a real senioritis situation in Baton Rouge at this point.
The problem is, and not problem for us, the problem for teams that might have to play. I don't think this is going to be an issue for Alabama, but I do think down the stretch, they still have really good players.
They do.
So you could still very much lose to LSU, even though you're not even thinking. You're like, oh, they fired their coach. What do they care? No, they could still be. So I don't think that's going to happen to Alabama this week. But, you know, these are really – we were going through that when we're talking about Florida and Georgia. Well, LSU's talent level is above Florida's.
I believe Florida's. The line on that game, 28.5 points. Now that's disrespectful for the talent level at LSU.
All right. Well, back to Oxford and the Hugh Freeze return to Oxford. I think if Liberty was better this year, this would be a much more spicy game. Liberty has lost to Syracuse, which, look, Syracuse has actually turned out to be pretty good. But Louisiana Monroe, they lost
the Monroe game. I thought Liberty coming into the season, they smelled like a New Year's Six contender, having the type of season that we saw from Coastal. Not quite to the level of Cincinnati. Cincinnati is a different sort of animal. But when you're playing in the Sun Belt and you've got, are they still independent? They're in the Sun Belt.
They're independent. Right? They're independent. They are not going into the new Sun Belt. Maybe they get into the new Conference USA.
Yes. But when you're at that level and you have a first round pick at quarterback, you're going to be able to do some special things. And Malik Willis, he's looked a little spotty in places this year, but they can still score some points. It's still going to be a fun game, Andy.
And Ole Miss with their receiver situation, they're very depleted at receiver. Yes. So will they be? And then Matt Corral, you know, he came back and played on that ankle against Auburn.
If nothing's broken, I think he'll be okay. That's the thing. I when he came out, it looked like it. You know, you don't want to guess Achilles, but it was a weird hit. It didn't look like it. He didn't look like it. You know, you didn't see the crazy roll. He got tackled kind of awkwardly, and it looked like when he was laying on the ground and his other foot was like shaking. He was in a ton of pain. And it looked really, really bad. But if nothing's broken, you know, even if it's something sprained, I think we're going to see Matt Corral on the field. I'll be shocked if we don't. Can he look like he did? He looked pretty healthy on Saturday night, but can he?
Yeah. I mean, he was running for touchdowns in the second half. So I think he'd be all right. But, if Ole Miss is mostly okay, health wise, if you know, they're going to win this game. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that there's going to be any sort of catharsis. Hugh Freeze, I'm sure doesn't feel any fondness coming back because everybody's gonna be yelling at him. But it is amazing to think that 6 years ago he had them one crazy Hunter Henry lateral away from winning the SEC West.
Mm-hmm. Still one of the wildest plays in the history of maybe college football, Andy. That's probably top 10 in college football.
Absolutely. I remember watching it and being like, why aren't the announcers more excited about what's happening here? But maybe they were just confused or just amazed by what was happening in front of their eyes, and they didn't know what to do.
Maybe we may need a retrospective on that play at some point. I need a. Is there an anniversary of that play coming up? We have to do something along those lines. That's a good story idea.
It's 6 years, so it's not. There's no nice round number coming up. We got to wait till 2025 to get the 10-year.
Yeah.
But Hunter Andy, Henry will be deep into his NFL career at that point. So,
yeah, Andy, over under on the amount of 100 yard rushers for Georgia on Saturday against Missouri. If I give you 2.5,
I'm going to go under.
Okay.
Because isn't Kendall Milton's hurt still? Or is he going to be back?
I don't imagine he's going to get a high volume of carries on Saturday.
So, if it's three, it's going to have to be Zamir, James Cook, and Kenny McIntosh, that all three of them do.
Very doable.
I think somebody gets hot. Somebody. It's so hard to evenly distribute those things.
Yeah. Well, we got to get them in on it.
Do I think Georgia rolls in this game? Yes, I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Andy, it's been good. Football and grits, another week. But we haven't talked much grits lately, Andy. Not grits not grits specifically, but grits theoretically. The best meal that you've had in the last month or so since we've been able to chat this up.
It was probably yesterday morning.
Really?
I've been counting calories. I'm down 16 pounds since I started.
Nice. And that's hard to do during the season, Andy. I tip my cap to you.
Yeah, I'm not getting a lot of exotic meals in, but Halloween was a cheat day for me, so rules are off. And we went to the biscuit place up in front of my neighborhood, and I got the five and dime, which is fried chicken, cheddar, bacon on a biscuit covered in gravy, and then I got six extra biscuits to mop up the gravy with.
Six extra biscuits.
Heaven.
I can't do that much carbs, man. That is a lot.
I didn't eat all six. My kids took one of them, so I ended up eating five of them.
Yeah. Well, that's good. The I'm still a sucker for just anyone that's serving bacon burn ends in any capacity.
Oh yeah.
I'm not a big
I've made them. They're not hard to make.
Yeah, I've made them on my smoker a little bit.
Yeah, most grocery stores carry pork belly now, and they're pretty easy to do.
Mm-hmm. I would recommend it, and it's not as intense as a brisket or something.
No, it's pretty idiot proof. There's a lot of fat on the pork.
I would say it's slightly more difficult than a pork shoulder, just because that's like almost impossible to screw up.
Right. Set it and forget it.
Yeah. But it's still are you a big spritzer, Andy, with the apple cider vinegar?
Not really, because I have an egg, so you're really not supposed to be lifting that lid very often.
Yeah. I have a pellet grill that doubles as a smoker. I need to do a test group, because I feel like I'm not sure it's doing that much, but maybe it is. Mm. We'll see.
Well, the pellet grills, I know people bag on the pellet grills, but you're getting wood smoke. You're getting real wood flavor. That can't be bad. Yeah. Like, yes, we would all love to have our own custom rig where, like, if we lived in Texas, we could feed post oak into it and smoke brisket. But let's be honest, how many of us actually have time to do that?
I don't. I can tell you I don't. I will buy my bag of pellets and I will feed them into the hopper, and it's wonderful.
And it probably makes your steak, probably your burgers and steaks are awesome.
Yes.
On that, because you're getting the wood smoke on that, which, you know, usually you have to go to a place that specializes in a wood grill to make that happen.
There's only a few of those. I mean, there's some, but yeah, I think that would be the one that stands out. I'm trying to – I did go to when I was covering Georgia and Kentucky a couple weeks ago, I met up with some family and went to I believe it's Fan Thai. I forget the name of it. Mm-hmm. It was an unbelievable Thai place, and we ordered this – it's a full tree of Thai appetizers. It's like six different things. Ooh. On this, like,
in a tree, in tree,
in
form.
Tree form. I like this. In tree form. It's like a rack, and then there's like six different plates. There's like spring rolls, and then there's I forget what all it was. All of it was very, very good.
This is like the seafood tower at a steakhouse, except it's a tree.
Yeah, and a lot of it was fried, to be fair, but it was all very good.
Nothing wrong with that.
It was all very, very good. So I need to I forgot the name of it, but it is in downtown Atlanta. Very good place. I believe it's Fan Thai, something along those lines. That stands out to me as one of the best things I've eaten. Not exactly Southern food, Andy, but still very good.
If we're talking Atlanta, I don't think we've talked about this since I went. The last time I was up in Atlanta, I went to Sox Love Barbecue in Cumming, Georgia. Matt Stenchcombe, the former Georgia offensive lineman, College Football Hall of Famer, you see him on SEC Network. He recommended it, and it's awesome. If you are up that way, if you're north of Atlanta and you're hungry, it's get the pulled pork. They do turkey really well. They do brisket well as well. It was outstanding. Good mac and cheese. So
whenever I can get good brisket, very pleased. I've given up on finding strong brisket in the state of Tennessee, Andy. And anytime I can find it,
yeah,
it's a treat, because
there are not many places. I know that they've got brisket places in Charleston where guys have come from Austin to do it. The Smokin' Pig in Pendleton, South Carolina, up near Clemson, does very good brisket. In Florida, the original Four River Smokehouse always did, down in Winter Park, always did really good brisket. And the Four River satellite locations, I gotta be honest, the brisket's not bad. Like, it's better than anywhere else you're gonna get in Florida and most of the South that isn't Texas.
We on the Staples cast this weekend, we talked a little bit about the Bearded Pig, but Andy, I knew I was in a very good spot when the first time I went to the Bearded Pig in Jacksonville, I ordered the brisket and they asked me if I wanted it fatty or lean. People do not ask that question outside of Texas and a few other spots. And that's when I know, they know what they're doing.
Well, Bearded Pig has an incredible beef rib. That's the move at Bearded Pig. Now, if you're dining by yourself, that's a lot of food, but you know, I can take one. And they also do the brisket poutine at Bearded Pig, which is really delicious.
I like poutine more in theory than I do in practice. Like, I like it as a concept, and then I start eating it, and the first, it's a little bit like a Cinnabon to me in that sense. And at the first few bites,
neither of these things are bad.
No, but the first few bites,
these things
are
amazing.
The first few bites, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I love this. And then I get about 6 or 7 bites in, and I'm like, oh, this was a lot.
See,
this was a lot.
That never gets old. Yes, it's a lot. Give me more of a lot.
The poutine,
I
think my body is just not prepared for it. I like my cheese curds a little more fried than just sort of chilling.
Well, when you get the southern variations on poutine, the cheese curds, they'll do different things. Either they won't include the cheese curds, or they'll have some cheese in some other form.
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe they figure the palates aren't quite ready for cheese curds. There was a place I went to in Louisville one time that did their poutine with sausage gravy, and it was awesome.
Like a white gravy with sausage?
Yeah, like when you do business like a gravy.
Yeah, that, interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room for innovation in poutine, which I respect. I do like that.
I want to start. So my neighbor and I have talked about this. I want to start a poutine takeout spot in college towns next to the bar district. Like when I was a student at Florida, Five Star Pizza would have people standing outside the bars with a big, you know, the big warmer bags full of pepperoni and cheese pizzas. And they'd sell them for $5 a pop, and they just, you know, clean them out. And it costs $1 to make them. So they were making big profits off this. I want like a poutine window, and you can do, you have like 5 variations. You have like a classic poutine, you do southern poutine with the sausage gravy. You do a couple different, you know, different regional variations on it, and just drunk college kids forking over $8 for fries and gravy with a little tiny smattering of meat. I mean, it our cost is like $1.50. We charge $8 to $10, and they're in heaven.
There you go. Andy, I'm glad you have a backup plan if this journalism thing doesn't work out.
You always need to. You just never know.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in to football and finally football and actual grits. There's been a lot of football, Andy. We haven't had enough time to talk food as much this season.
Well, speaking of grits, that biscuit place I'm talking about at the front of my neighborhood, they cut the grits with cream cheese. Mm. David.
I'm intrigued.
That's what I should have been doing my entire life. I've been eating grits for a long time. That makes a big difference. It's outstanding. Yeah.
I like it. I'm going to have to try that. There's the Maple Street Biscuit Company. There's one very close to me. I need to hit that up. Andy, it's been a good week. Looking forward to another interesting week of people getting mad about the committee's rankings. I'm sure that won't happen this week. And people trying to fire their coach after Saturday's games. I'm sure that won't happen either. It's going to be a fun week across the SEC. Thank you guys for listening. This has been Football and Grits. Subscribe if you haven't already. Get this show delivered directly to your device. I am David Ubben for Andy Staples. This has been Football and Grits. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you again next week.